This latest podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Focal USA and the Counselor on Queen West. Also, be sure to register your email address on our website, centeroflysnation.com, for all our weekly updates directly to your inbox.
Welcome to this podcast of Center of Leafs Nation. This is Pat LaRusso and joined by my co-host, Anthony Sino. Anthony Sino, welcome back for another podcast. How have you been?
I've been good, Pat. How about you?
I can't complain. To our listeners, I'm actually going to be on vacation next week, but Anthony and the team will have a brand new podcast for you. I'm sure there'll be some jam-packed topics that they'll be discussing next week, but I'm definitely looking forward to a week off and, you know, spending some time with some friends coming in from out of town.
Yeah, we're definitely going to miss you, but it's basically like the parents away right now. Let the kids will rule the roost for a week. We'll see what we can, hopefully we don't get into any trouble.
Yeah, that is true. Let's start off this week's podcast with some unfortunate news. I was actually really looking forward to watching Matthew Nyes at this World Juniors. Really looking forward to kind of seeing where things go and kind of how the tournament shaped up for him. You know, the Americans bailed out or got knocked out last night to the Czechs. Anthony, just kind of get, before we go into specifics, I want to kind of get your feel for, you know, the tournament that you saw from Matthew Nyes and the type of game that you saw and kind of how maybe even how he was utilized throughout the tournament.
So I watched, I believe, just about every minute of Matthew Nyes in this world summer edition of the World Juniors. And I do have to say that it definitely wasn't something where you're going to look and say it's not something to get excited about, I guess, going into his season in Minnesota. But it is definitely, there is definitely some positives to take out of it. And I know that we are seeing on Twitter people just pulling up his box score, 3 assists in 5 games. I believe they're all secondary assists, or maybe one was primary. But that just goes to show you, I think, that if people are going to judge his tournament on something like that, they're sadly mistaken, and they definitely didn't watch him play, because he showed a physical dominance and a two-way game that I really enjoyed watching him play in. He was on the second line for the United States, not the offensive juggernaut line that kind of drove the bus for the United States in the preliminary round, but definitely an important piece on the team. And he was playing PP1 on the net front presence. He was one of the larger forwards on the team. He had some of the biggest hits I've seen in the tournament thus far, especially on the United States. And he brought a much needed element to an American team that doesn't necessarily play the way that Matthew Nyes likes to play, which is below the dots, cycle. He's not necessarily, I don't think he's that great of a rush player. I think he needs to work on his stick handling and his speed through the neutral zone to become more effective that way. But I definitely liked, there's definitely some positives there. And just to sum up my whole little capsule on his overall tournament, the people that want to pull up his box score and say that he's got no goals, he had 12 shots in 5 games, over 2 shots a game. And that doesn't count. I believe he hit like 4 or 5 posts. Like he was all over it, all over the net. Mind you, and I think he was one of the better players for the United States in what was their most challenging game, or their two most challenging games, their last two in the tournament. 3-2 against Sweden to clinch Group B. He was one of the better players. I think he was one of the best players on the ice in that game. And that's like two junior teams that have a lot of NHL prospects, a lot of high-end NHL prospects. And against Czechs, another team with a lot of NHL prospects as well, Knies was one of the better forwards trying to pull the United States back into the game. I really liked his performance by the eye test. Maybe the analytics, I haven't seen any of them come out yet, his shot metrics. I just know how many total shots he has, but they might tell a different story. But from the eye test, not just looking at the box score, I think he was one of the better players and definitely something positive that you can take into a season at Minnesota, and definitely some improvements as well. So there's still a lot to be excited about with the prospect of Matthew Knies.
Yeah, and for me, the way I kind of just look at a prospect is I kind of always look at it long-term. You know, like, unless you're like an Austin Matthews or even a Mitch Marner or, you know, some of the other, like, I think even William Nylander still ranks, one of the top world junior performances. You know what I mean? Like, we're talking names like that just from a Petrano perspective. Sometimes tournaments just don't go your way, you know? And like you said, Anthony, you know, he was averaging 2.5 shots, hit some posts along the way. A lot of it's puck luck, in a lot of situations. And it's just, I don't know. I hate hanging a 5-game series of games on a young player and just
in
assume
August.
That in August, no less. And just assume that that's his trajectory.
It's just irresponsible. You know, we always come back to the same logic here, Pat, with people we all come back to the same point with regards to trying to reason with the people that will say something negative about a Dubas pick or a Dubas trade or a Dubas signing or whatever. It always avoids perspective. They eliminate perspective from it. They have a narrative and they're like, well, this is a Dubas guy. He obviously didn't perform well. Here's a screenshot of him not scoring a goal in 5 games and basically saying, how can Dubas fans still defend him? I'm like, well, you know what? Like, it's just, I can't level with those people. I refuse to interact with them because I don't I don't like interacting with people that will never look outside the scope of their narrative. And I like to consider myself a pretty open-minded person. I thought, and Pat, I think we talked about this at the time, that when there was talk about Matthew Knies signing an NHL deal after his school season was done this past season, I was one of the people that said, like, I don't think he's ready. Yeah. I don't think he's ready to come into the NHL yet. He's an October kid. I can look it up. So he's probably an 03, but he's an 02, but was drafted with the 03s because of his late birthday. He's born October 17th. So he is 19, going to be 20 in October. So it's very rare for a player to have the season he had, which was a point per game in a very strong NCAA conference, but it's very rare to have that season he had come into the NHL and be productive. And the risk you have as a team and as an organization is stagnating his development. Yeah. And that was one thing where I'm like, with Dubas specifically, that was one of my knocks on Dubas, is that he didn't find enough to reinvigorate our fourth line going into the playoffs. And he thought that Nick Abbruzzese and Matthew Knies were the way to do it. He brought in Colin Blackwell, obviously, and he was a pretty solid player. But it, just going back to that point in time, I'm glad that he didn't sign. You know, I just don't think he was ready. I think another year at school is going to be helpful for him. He's not eligible for the upcoming World Juniors at Christmas. He's too old for that now. But I'm not going to let five games in August define him as a prospect and ruin my opinion of him. He went to the Olympics in February or wherever, whenever it was, and he had a goal and an assist in four games at the Olympics, and he had some great shot metrics there. I know that people were very excited about him, and that's probably one of the reasons why Dubas wanted to have him sign after his school year was done. But I think if people want to recall back to that Christmas World Juniors that were canceled because of COVID, he had his first two games. I think he scored like in two games, I believe he had two or three goals, or at least maybe two goals and three or four points in those two games. Like, he was off to a hot start. He scored the first goal of the tournament for the Americans. Yes. when that tournament started before it got canceled. So if he goes and if he's on the right track at the Christmas tournament, then what are the people that are hating on him now have to say? What do those tweets look like? Or do they even exist at all?
No, right? I think what happens is it's the moving of the goalposts, right? And you bring up an interesting point. What happens if the December World Juniors doesn't get canceled and he continues on the tear,
right?
And this doesn't happen.
Imagine he just went from like development camp to Minnesota, and he starts a season off hot, and there it goes. Like this last 2 weeks don't exist.
But then what the narrative would have been, well, the World Juniors don't matter because he's not playing against NHL competition. You know what I mean? Like, it's the constant shifting of goalposts. And I find it's more attached to anyone or anything that's attached to Dubas, that this forever. I find, like, if you're looking at a player that's tied to, say, something that Lou Lamoriello brought in, or you know what I mean, it's given a little bit more of a grace period. But when it comes to Dubas, any player that's ever been tied to him, like, even like I'm finding people debating on John Tavares being overpaid, and people forget, like, there were three or four other teams lined up to give this man between $12 and $14 million. You know what I mean? And he took less to come home.
I could go for days on
you,
that.
You know what I mean?
Argument.
It's the constant moving, and it's a slap in the face of Matthew Nyes. Like, he's a legit prospect.
That point you just made about Tavares, Pat, is probably, for me, I don't know what the exact comparison is. I know I saw something online to properly word it, but it is the hockey top out of all hockey topics that I can discuss with people. That is the one that boils my blood and raises my blood pressure more than anything. It's that you had six other teams, maybe five or six other teams, flying out to LA ready to hand Tavares a deal for more AAV than the one that he's currently on. And because the Leafs ended up with him now it all of a sudden is a bad deal. Like, Tampa Bay was there. Boston was there. San Jose was there. New York was there. Montreal couldn't even get a seat at the table, but they tried.
Yeah.
So what, again, not to go down, keep going down that road, but it is the moving of the goalposts, and we're seeing it here with Matthew Nyes, not in a loud sense. Again, it's a
fringe vocal group. It's definitely
a fringe vocal minority.
Yeah, it's a fringe group. But what happens is it then becomes the talking heads on the radio kind of pick up on it, and they just reinforce an incomplete narrative. You know what I mean? That's the part that has always frustrated me. Is give people the full context. Like, remind people that Matthew Nyes had a great start until COVID shut down the tournament last December. Remind people of the fact that, you know what, against his peers, and the U.S. College League is a legit developmental league. You know what I mean? Like,
it's arguably on par with the CHL.
It's a very competitive hockey league. Minnesota, the school that he plays at, is one of the top universities for hockey in the United States. You know, he's part of the U.S. developmental program, so they definitely see something in him if they continue to, you know, use him on the international front. Like it boggles my mind. It legit boggles my mind that the same critics that are hard on Matthew Nyes were crickets when it came to some of Mark Hunter's picks, who we discussed on a previous podcast, in total played 40 games of NHL games. You
Yep.
know what I mean? Like,
We and this guy hasn't even this guy's well on his way to becoming an NHL player. I think we can confidently say that.
Yeah, and I'm
Like he's
and
got
you're
the
right.
physical tools. He's
Yeah.
got the he's not size won't keep him there. His skating, we know that the Leafs can develop a skater in a big in a big body, and he's got hands around the net. I think like there's a play where he literally blew up a Swede in the second last game, the last game of the preliminary round. He's got two cotton swabs or cotton let's just call them cotton swabs. I don't want to say what they actually look like, but they are stuffed up his nose because he was bleeding out of his nose. He's got a cut on his face, and he just is hitting guys left and right, getting into the scrums. He's driving to the front of the net. He's a big body. He is what the people that hate Dubas want. You know what I
Exactly.
mean?
Yeah.
Which is the irony in all of this. And Pat, not to change the topic totally, but I think this is a pretty big news item that just got announced on Twitter, courtesy of Kevin Weeks. Some breaking news on the podcast. TSN
Oh,
insert
wow.
TSN sound. Nazem Kadri is signing with the Calgary Flames, and Sean Monahan is being
Moved.
likely moved to free up the space. So I guess on that, just quickly, there is screw you, Lou Lamoriello. You thought that you can wait on a deal with Nazem that was under the table, and you tried to kind of game the system and have deals that are in a drawer somewhere and not announce them, and the Flames swoop in. I love that. I love the way that Calgary has basically took two players that don't want to be there, and they turn them into Jonathan Huberdeau in an 8-year deal and Nazem Kadri. And ironically enough, it seemed like Kadri didn't want to. I know people were saying, well, Kadri didn't want to go to Calgary when the Leafs tried to trade him there for TJ Brody. Well, people forget that Naz wanted to stay in Toronto,
Yeah.
right? And that's one of the probably one of the mistakes of Kyle Dubas's regime is moving too fast on a Kadri deal after he nixed the Calgary one. But I guess it came full circle here for Naz, and I'm excited for him, Pat. I'm pretty sure I could speak for you too that you're super excited. I think the Battle of Alberta is way back on now. You know what I mean? You sub out Tkachuk, but you bring in Kadri, who we know McDavid doesn't like to play. And I'm sure Evander Kane will get acquainted with Naz as well. I'm excited for Calgary. This is huge.
Yeah, and it's and it's funny because like, so in one of the text exchanges, like, you know, Dubas gets, you know, oh, he Tavares wanted to come home and yada yada yada. What are the people who supported Lou Lamoriello thinking today that he just lost out on the premium free agent that possibly could have turned over his roster? And like you said, Anthony, you know, I know he was probably working the phones to try and dump some of his dead money contracts, and no one was biting this time. No one was
That's
biting to
good for
take
the
Lou off the
league.
roof. Good on the league for not taking Lou off
I'm
the hook.
sick and tired of him watching him get bailed out
And
because
it's and
it.
now and now he's lost out on the premium free agent. And now he has to go to Barzal and say, you've got another, your premium years are on a aging roster. And you lost one of the top NHL coaches this year in Barry Trotz. Like it literally it this story now literally writes itself, Anthony. It literally writes itself. And I have no issues with Lou Lamoriello, but the statehood, the sainthood that he attracted from a certain portion of our fan base that is now anti-Dubas now needs to wear this. You know what I mean? The media in Toronto that have constantly bashed Dubas for all his moves now need to wear what we're watching in the island, because they were the ones that are pushing the narrative. Oh, why did the Leafs let Lou walk? Well, this is why. He let one of the NHL top coaches walk You know what I mean? And the Mike Babcock situation is completely different than the Barry Trotz one. Mike Babcock treated his players very horribly. Everyone from like Jason Spezza to, you know, some of his treatment of Barry and even the whole Mitch Marner story. You know what I mean? This is what I want everyone to hang their hats on now. If you sat there and have bashed Dubas over the last 2 summers based on his moves, I want you all to wear this. Like, there's no other story. That is the story. Calgary came in and swooped in and got the premium free agent. You know, obviously the numbers
Not
will impact
the
what I
number one, not the number one guy, but the I agree with in a grander sense of what you're saying, but like obviously Goodrow was the number one guy, but I think the point you're trying to make, just to maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm thinking you're saying like
This is the one that everyone was.
Lou couldn't go get the guy he wanted
Yep.
because of the money that he already committed to
For
debt
everyone else, for
to
on dead money.
older to
Yep.
older dead players. And now he has two RFA defensemen now that he has to sign. And I'm looking right now, I just quickly pulled it up. He's got $11 million in cap space. So people are going to say, oh, cap space, look at Lou managing the cap. No, he's got to sign two RFAs right now who are not signed. And maybe they are going to sign now that they just lost out on Kadri, but he tried to bring in the two RFAs and Kadri, but in order to do that, he had to move out a Brock Nelson, who's got a modified no trade at $6 million a year, or Pageau at $5 million a year, modified no trade for 4 years. Kyle Palmieri, UFA, 3 more years, no trade clause, not modified, literally no trade clause, $5 million, or a 25-year-old great middle six forward in Anthony Beauvillier. For who's a UFA in 2 years at $4.1 million currently, or their captain, no trade clause, Andrews Lee, set 4 more years, $7 million, right? And Matt Barzal's up in a year, by the way. So, or and sorry, Josh Bailey, forgot about him. All these guys are older players except for Barzal and Beauvillier, but you have to make some room. You got Oliver Wahlstrom again, who's up in a year. They're in some trouble. Right now, the only thing I think that Luke has done is he's trying to lock in his goalie. He's got Sorokin there, but to tie it back to the Leafs, like you said, these people have to wear this now. No one is gonna like no one comes to let's call it the defense of Dubas when he makes a good trade. Obviously, they're very quick to jump in and say, oh, this Nick Ritchie didn't work out. Look at Peter Mrazek trading a first round pick for Peter Mrazek. Again, just doesn't logically, like, just doesn't make sense when you say that he traded another first round pick for it. He literally moved back 13 spots. But it just goes to the, it attributes to the dumb narrative that this team would have been better off with Lou. And we keep
Yeah.
rehashing it, Pat. I feel like we always come back to this, but
But it's because
I
we
think
have
it's
to,
rel
because
it's re it's relevant because it seems like every topic that is live on Leafs Twitter all the time is like Dubas ran this team into the ground, big money contracts handed out with no experience and all this shit, right? And look at what the Islanders were went before Lou started, and and look at what they are now. Right, they're heading on a.
Oh,
You can ar you
they're
can argue that they're not on the upward trajectory. They're on
no.
the they're on they're either flat or on the downward trajectory.
They're
I know people are going to talk about, oh, two back-to-back conference final appearances. I'm willing to stake a large amount of money on that's the Barry Trotz effect and not necessarily the
who Lou brought in.
who yes, exactly.
And it's kind of just it's really and funny, like this whole topic about like Kyle Dubas and contracts kind of takes us to our next topic for this week's podcast, and it's Rasmus Sandin still without a contract. It's funny. So this goes back to once again, because I think we need to frame this conversation back to when the Leafs and Kyle Dubas were you know signing Matthews, Marner, and Nylander. Everyone said, oh, look at this guy. He's handing out contracts to guys who are unproven. The same people that him and Hod and Hollard and all that on social media are now complaining that Dubas isn't buckling with Sandin. Now, I like the player. And Anthony, you can vouch. I've always liked the player. I think he has, you know, some upside.
I think everyone's a fan of the player. I think what people are tired of, especially in this fan base, is that players, like, this is not even, he is not the level of, does not have the ELC resume of a Matthews, a Marner, or a Nylander. But he's making the, seems to be making the demands or wants the comfortability or the security of those types of players. And just, and I think frankly, a part of Dubas's maturity as a GM has been like, sorry, no, you know what? You just aren't able to walk in and say like, yeah, like I want you to trade Jake Muzzin because I think I'm a top four guy. Like,
yeah,
you can't, you the coach will tell you when you're ready. And if you don't want to be here enough, where if you can't sign a bridge deal for 2 years, where you there's an end goal in sight here, clearly, that the Leafs have not signed anyone over a 2 year span. Muzzin and Brody are up in 2 years. There is room to grow for Sandin, who I think is what, 22 now.
Yeah.
By the time you're 24 years old, Rasmus, you are going to be a bona fide top four player here. We just need you to continue to develop.
Yeah.
And if you're not willing to play ball here on an organization that has that traded back in or because they clearly loved you, gave you shots, gave you early shots at the NHL before anyone who in your draft class got one at your draft slot, has never said a bad thing about you in the media, praised you even. And now you're saying, well, I'm not willing to move to the right side. I got to play the left. Or like, what are we doing here?
But even that, see, even that's not so much. Like I kind of like a player that's trying to map out his place on a roster. I think for me, it really does boil down to, everyone complained about how Dubas handled contracts, and now he's holding firm to a number. You know what I mean? Obviously, it means that the Leafs are still going to need to clear out some space. But really, we had all anticipated that one of Hall or Kerfoot will more than likely be traded prior to the season. I'm more leaning towards it being Justin Hall and kind of just pushing the Hall money onto Sandin. But
yeah, I'm fine with that too.
Right? But if
he doesn't want to be here.
Then that's the flip side. So then do you package him with a Kerfoot and get a more bona fide forward to help complete the Nylander-Tavares line? Like, I don't see, unless someone comes in that's unexpected and offer sheets him and the Leafs lose him for nothing, he is still a tradable asset. You know what I mean? So barring an unexpected offer sheet, you trade him with a Kerfoot, up the ante, and get something better in return for that same money. You know what I mean? So like, yeah, you're either going to get him for the money. You're either going to get him for the money that you feel comfortable paying him. It's still going to mean that you're going to need to offset and trade away Justin Hall or you know what I mean? At the very least, we can make it work. So financially, it's not a problem. But if you're really going to hold firm to a particular number that he thinks he's owed, then you move him. But then you're good. But then know that you're going to get a better asset in return. If maybe that means you pair him up with a Kerfoot or you pair him up with another asset, because we all know that the Leafs are looking for an additional forward to complete the Tavares and Nylander line. You know what I mean? Like right now
they could go into the season cap compliant and be perfectly and like with the 20-man roster, they could start game one quite comfortably.
Yeah.
Right. You got same top six as last year with Kerfoot, Engvall, Kamp, Bjarnkroek, Robertson, Gaudette, Kubel, or whoever, Clifford, whoever you want to put there, Steves, Joey Anderson, anyone works, doesn't matter as long as they make less than like 900 grand. And then Riley, Brody, Muzzin, Hall, Giordano, Liljegren, the two goalies. 20-man roster, you're 122 grand under the cap. So there's no rush here.
Yeah, there's no rush, right? So this whole idea of the Leafs being in doomsday, and because what happens is, and I don't really think when I see the loudest people on Twitter, I don't think they really understand the salary cap, or that a team can be over up until, I think it's what, 10% over the cap prior to
Yeah, they could
training
be like
camp
eight.
opening,
They could be 8 million up until I think like the beginning of the season,
or even to the beginning of the
like
season.
October, like October 11th or whatever the date is.
Right? So like there's plenty of time to move money. Like it's so funny because people just automatically assume as well that, oh, there's no news, so that means Dubas is, you know, sitting in a in some cottage doing nothing. You know, I'm sure he's trying to make some moves. I'm sure now with Nazem Kadri off the board, you know, does that now make Alexander Kerfoot that much more attractive on the trade front? You know what I mean? Because maybe the Islanders swoop in, and maybe there's a way that Lewin and Kyle can work together on that. Or maybe someone was looking at Kadri as a second or third line center, and now they've just lost it because Calgary swooped in. You know what I mean? Like having an
I think
additional set.
there is something there that we can work with. I think the unique part of this is if you're gonna go, like if we're gonna go with the six that we have, take out Sandin, right? And they want to keep Hall. Because I think Hall and Giordano would be a strong third pair. Like I'm with you that if Kerfoot is the move with Sandin to bring in another forward, I think that would be the best case scenario, because then you can run a Brody Muzzin shutdown pair and a Hall Giordano shutdown pair, and you have Liljegren and Riley together, and that is like your offensive zone starts. Put them in situations to play with the top six lines and really have them go. You know what I mean? And they're like they're your all gas line, and then the other two pairs are your all breaks line, basically, to make a car comparison. And then you use the Kerfoot money with Sandin, and that can you can basically bring in like a $3 million to $3 million player or so, right? And if you think that it's like maybe they could package Kerfoot and Sandin to get an NHL player who's on an ELC currently, and then go out and sign like Evan Rodriguez right now or Sonny Milano and bring in two forwards
Yeah.
if they don't think that they can bring in like a JT Miller or a
Yeah.
Connor Garland or whoever, right? I think I would like to see a Connor Garland or JT Miller, preferably more Garland because he's got term on his deal, and I think it offers some insurance for a potential Nylander UFA situation in 2 years' time. But I think the point is they have options. But to bring it back to Sandin, why I'm confused here is the coach has talked fantastic, like has never said a bad thing about him. If you're gonna wait to hold out until camp. And well, I guess we're back on talking with pressure points on terms of timelines, but what are the pressure points? The pressure points are start of camp, and then the other pressure point is start of the season, and then the last pressure point is probably that December 1st deadline. And I think if Rasmus had any brain or anyone in his ear that could say, like, man, don't miss training camp. You saw what it did to a player like Nylander, and Nylander is a better player than you. At a skill like you saw, not for the media perspective, but for the way that it just basically that season for Nylander was basically a waste. He struggled mightily because he was 3.5 months behind.
maybe
Don't let
just
that happen to you at 22 years old.
see the way I the more and the more you say that, I'm really leaning towards maybe him being part of a trade piece,
Well, if that's the case, then yeah, that's the only option.
right? Like I
If he's
think
not
it,
going to show up to camp,
but even
like,
but
okay, the
what's to
Leafs
say
have
that, that
insurance. I guess there's no pressure on the Leafs front
no
unless a player that they've been pining for
comes available
becomes available.
or is
You
available.
know what
You know what
it?
I mean? And we just don't know yet because nothing really leaks out of the Leafs head office, right? So like the Leafs are under no pressure to sign him, and really they know that they need to move one of Kerfoot and Hall, you know, likelihood it'd be Hall, right? But if they can, like you said,
I think it's more Kerfoot, but like we
but
can
now,
agree
but
to
like I said,
disagree on
now that
that.
Kadri's off the board, all those teams that thought that they were in on him, or all those teams that had, you know, kicked tires on Kadri just to kind of get a feel for his number, do those teams now say the Leafs have Kerfoot? You know what I mean? Why not explore a trade? He's good. He's been good. You know what I mean? Like, Kerfoot's a viable asset. You know, he's not going to swing the needle either way, but he's really not harming you either. Like, he's had two back-to-back decent playoffs. I didn't like the one penalty he got against Tampa, but really, when you look back on it, if the first penalty against Camp didn't happen, then maybe the one against Kerfoot doesn't either. But at the end of the day, like, he's had some pretty good playoff success. He's reliable. He's a utility knife style player where you can put him anywhere on the roster. He's low maintenance. You know, I've never heard any bad things said about him that he doesn't want to work with the team or has a particular mindset of where he thinks he needs to be on the roster. Like, anything that a fan or even a management group would want out of a player, Alexander, that's him, right? So, like I said, from a Leafs perspective, I don't know. I just don't see the pressure to sign Sandin. And if there's a move to be made, he's definitely a pretty attractive sweetener to get something better to really round out this roster. And I don't see it as a negative either. You know what I mean? He's a viable prospect. I'd like him to stay a Leaf, but if he's holding on to a certain number and the Leafs can package that with someone else to get what they really need, then I don't see any big drawback on it. They've got the depth now on defense with Ben and with Monte. You know what I mean? Like, Liljegren has shown that he can play some big minutes. You know, this will be potentially a full season with him on the Leafs roster. He showed really well with Giordano. Maybe Timothy Liljegren's ascension made Sandin maybe a little bit more of a card to play in a trade, right? Like,
I think that's a big part of this. I think that he Liljegren's ascension, and clearly we noticed it right off the bat, is that Dubas lumped them together. Up until last year, it was Sandin, then Liljegren.
Yeah.
Now Dubas is like Sandin and Liljegren together.
Yeah.
Right? And he loops them in. I think it's probably a big factor. And with that being said, we have to be able to, there's got to be an outline here and a kind of a breaking point where it's the start of the season. We're a month out from training camp. We're less than a month out from training camp. I don't recall many trades being happening like at the beginning of September, like at training camp, because the players are already in town. Like if we're past Labor Day and Kerfoot and Hall are still Leafs, I don't know if that means that they're going to be traded at least until the start of the season. Like, very rarely do you see trades at that time. Now, I should know better to rule out Dubas going by old conventions and traditions where he's just refused to make a trade before like November or December. But it the more time that goes on here, the less likely I think either of Hall or Kerfoot are traded. And I think that with the Sandin situation happening, maybe teams are telling Dubas, like, hey, you want to like upgrade on a Kerfoot and get a better forward? Like, don't even bother calling us unless Sandin's part of the package. And I think this delay is Dubas saying, like, hey, man, this is what we can pay you. If you're not willing to play ball, eventually we're going to have to make a decision.
Yeah. I truly believe that Nazem Kadri being off the board opens up avenues. Like, I really believe that.
I'm with you. RFAs are still on the board, because I want to see if this isn't just a Leaf thing. I want to see.
No, it's definitely not a Leaf thing, because everyone, when it was the Islanders that were looking, that had all these trades in Loosh's desk and they were moving all this money. I forget which report, I believe it was out of New York, that said, once Kadri goes, that's the pressure valve. So now that pressure valve has been released and we know where Kadri's going, you have to think that the teams that missed out are more inclined to then want to pursue who else is available. And it can't be, like, it's not a secret outside of Toronto that Kerfoot, the Leafs need to, you know, maybe get, you know, get off of his contract to kind of fill that wing role on the Tavares Nylander line. Like, that's no secret, right? And I think that's where the next little bit of chunk of money that will be spent will be applied. Because I like the depth moves that the Leafs did to kind of give an identity to their third and fourth lines. I like Kubel. I like Jankrock. I like the fact that, you know, there'll be some internal growth, maybe with a Nick Robertson starting off on the fourth line. You know what I mean? Like, I like that progression. And I've been a huge fan since the Leafs signed Kampf. That guy is such a sneaky signing. I really do hope that they're able to re-sign him.
I think they are going to look too.
I like him. I think he's great. He's given that third line that defensive
identity.
Defensive identity. And I thought he played well with Engvall. I'm hoping to God, like, I know this may not be for, you know, Lucas on our team, but if Engvall can come back, this upcoming year, with the same edge that he showed in the Tampa Bay series, man, watch out. That third line's going to, you know, it's going to make some noise. They may not score a lot of goals, but they're sure as hell suppress a lot of goals against.
Yeah, I think I think you could probably pencil that in as our third line right now. I think the holes right now, when we look at the lineup, is I think there's going to be a battle for fourth line center. There's going to be a battle for, well, actually not really, because Kubel you could probably lock him in on the right wing on the fourth line. There's going to be a battle for two fourth line spots, I think, with a lead, with an edge to Robertson for the fourth line left wing.
Yeah.
Or maybe they try Robertson with the Nylander Tavares line to start. So there's options there. Basically, I think three forward spots unaccounted for, with the second line left winger spot to either be filled by Robertson early on and see if he can run with it, and or a trade that brings in, or signing that brings in an additional piece.
Yeah.
I think that you could probably lock in the first and the third line comfortably. I'm hoping to see more scoring on that line with Jarnkroc and Engvall, we need more scoring from our third and fourth lines.
Yeah.
I think with Simmons, I'm hoping that they make the hard decision and mind you, the numbers don't work out any other way other than them having a tough conversation with Wayne Simmons.
Yeah.
Saying, we have to waive you, Wayne. Sorry.
Yeah.
But please, like, I hope he's willing to go down to the minors and be a leader on that team, with, especially with Rich Kloon's retirement. And maybe that can be a hint to us as fans that if he's retiring and the Leafs aren't willing to pay him whatever it is to just kind of be the father figure on that team, fingers crossed, we could assume that that role will be co-filled by Kyle Clifford and Wayne Simmons on their NHL deals. And then if anything comes up during the season, we know that those guys could come in and play a game and not be totally worried. But just to bring this back to Sandin, Pat, I'm looking right now, there's 21 remaining RFAs still unsigned for this season. In order of points scored last year, I can do points per game. Jason Robertson, Noah Dobson, which we could assume now that he's signed, they're just the deal's in a drawer. Hayden Hodgson, who just got six games with Philadelphia at the end of the year. Kiefer Bellows, Sean Durzi, Alex Formanton, Linus Hogberg, Barrett Hayden, Kirby Dach, Noah Gregor, Adam Rzeczka, Philip Zadina, Rasmus Sandin, Ryan McLeod, Nick Hag, Eric Brandstrom, Alexander Romanov, Michael Anderson, Jonah Gajewicz, Wade Allison, Cale Fleury. Now, just to compare Sandin into this group, I wish I was able to sort it by the amount of games played in total. But okay, Cap Friendly doesn't allow you to do that. But in terms of games played last year, Sandin ranked 14th on this list out of the 24. He only played 51 games this year. I believe he's at 88 total. Correct me if I'm wrong, Pat, but he's only played 88 and yeah, I'm exactly right.
Yeah.
88 NHL games, 5 playoff games, 1 goal. One goal that was that goal against Montreal in like game 4 or something. So where is the experience here? A guy like Nick Hague, who is in Vegas, is played 142 NHL games, 10 playoff games. He's got 42 points in those 142 games. Sandin's got 28. Okay. So Sandin's obviously a more offensively gifted player, but Vegas is dealing with a guy like their own version of this. So yeah. It's clear. I wanted to just check this because I wanted to see if this is a Leafs issue or a league issue. And I think it's more of a league issue this year. Probably. I think maybe why this might become a bigger story is because everyone's familiar with Louis Gross. They know that he's Nylander's agent. They know he was the one that orchestrated the Nylander delay of his season. Right. So I think, all in all, we can eventually see some sort of resolution by training camp. I'm confident in that because I don't see all let's out of the 24 here, there's probably 15 relevant players that are like going to play in the NHL next year. In that group, I don't see like all 15 not having a resolution by training camp. And I don't think the Sandin situation is any different than the other 14 guys. So we'll get there eventually. Maybe we assume that the relationship is a little bit snarred because of our predispositions of what we hear in the media or on Leafs Twitter or what have you. But overall, to sum it up for me, I'd like to see him back. Because I think he's a great player. But if he's not willing to play ball and he's not willing to come in at a contract that the Leafs deem necessary to bridge the gap of these last two remaining years of Muzzin and Brody and have Sandin be affordable on that in that within those 2 years, and then we'll pay you what you feel that you're or we'll pay you your big deal, not what you feel what you're worth, because you're that would imply something else, but I think he just needs to be patient. You know what I mean? 88 NHL games doesn't lock you in for a top 4 spot. You need to battle for it. It's not going to be handed to you. And that's what's a little bit disheartening for me, if I can end it off there, is that it doesn't seem like he's willing to come into camp and say, I'm going to outplay Jake Muzzin. I'm going to outplay a 38-year-old Mark Giordano. And I'm going to play so well that I'm going to force Sheldon Keefe to put me in a situation that I want to be in. You know what I mean?
No, and I think for me, just to kind of my final sentiments on the Sandin situation is, we don't know what's going on. He might have a contract, or even if he's holding out, I like to think of it being more bigger picture. So, you know, is it the need to wait till money gets moved out to announce his new contract, and maybe they find a little, maybe there's a way that they meet each other halfway? Does it mean that he gets traded with Kerfoot for that additional forward that the Leafs feel that they need in on that second line? It'll get resolved either way, right? It's just, mm-hmm. I hate bashing a player, you know, especially since the advent of the salary cap and my pure hatred for it. I'm all up for players asking for whatever they want. You know what I mean? Like, the salary cap has suppressed salaries by like 25% from the minute it got instituted. So like, out of all the major sports, I think the NHL pays their players what I think the least out of all the major sports. So like, if a player wants to get bank, go get bank. Like, who knows how long an NHL career is going to be? You know what I mean? So if it means that he gets traded and the Leafs get that missing forward because they've paired him with the Kerfoot, I'm just as good. Like, there's nothing, like I said, the only thing that would piss me off is an offer sheet and then him walking for nothing. And I don't see that obviously happening. So whatever that outcome will be, I trust in management And I trust in the player that if he comes back, he'll be ready to play and give you know the team and the fans 110% every game. If he doesn't, he gets paired in a trade, and that means that the Leafs get a better asset in a trade. It's a win-win situation. You know what I mean? So I'm not ready to, you know, run this kid out of town because he's not signed to a contract, nor am I going to run the GM out of town because as of today, cap friendly says the Leafs only have 20,000, are already 20,000 over the cap, because most people who like to go look at those numbers really have no idea how the cap works and the flexibility a team has up until opening day. So I just want, for me, I've always been, let's just see how this plays out. Let's see now that Kadri's off the board, if that frees up other moves across the league, and what does that mean for the Leafs? Because maybe there's a player that none of us have even imagined now comes available. You know what I mean? So, like I said, I am not one to bash a 21-year-old kid who has the ceiling like a Sandin. We'll just have to just watch it. It'll definitely be a story for us to follow. But it's not doomsday. It's not a reason to fire the GM. It's not a reason to, you know, to just toss away a 21-year-old kid with some serious upside in a cannon and shoot him into the next market. It has to work out for both player and team. And if the money doesn't, he gets traded, and then there's still an asset coming back in that trade. So that's kind of where I'll leave my thoughts. And you know, thanks everyone for listening. And yeah, definitely be sure to continue to check us out on our weekly podcast. This has been great, Anthony, and
Yeah, it's
enjoy.
been great.
It's been great. Thanks everyone for listening. Take care.
Take care, guys.